40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro.
This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Monday night when the Toronto Raptors host the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Raptors beat the visiting Cavaliers in Game 3 over the weekend, 99-84. Cleveland now leads the best-of-seven series, 2-1. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Raptors center Bismack Biyombo, the pride of Lubumbashi, Democratic Republic of Congo. Bismack is nicknamed Biz by his Toronto teammates, and you might say he took care of Biz on the boards in Game 3, pulling down a Raptors playoff record 26 rebounds. Biyombo says his teammates have confidence in him playing good defense and protecting the basket.
I mean, they trust me. They know I work hard every day. And at the end of the day, I know that, you know, scoring is not an issue with me and the team. But if you see when we play in Cleveland, they shot, I think, 50-plus percent. And today we were able to lower them to below 40%. So my job was tonight, especially after I watched a bunch of film and see the mistakes that we were making, is just going back to just play defense and be the defensive mindset of our team.
Bismack Biyombo talks about defensive mindset. Part of his defensive mindset is to wag his index finger after he blocks shots. Bismack blocked 4 shots in Game 3. Biyombo says he received special permission from now-retired Congolese basketball great Dikembe Mutombo to do the finger wagging.
After I got the license from Mutombo. But I love him. He's like my big brother. And I've had several conversations about him, especially defensively, how he was able to impact the game. And of course, once he gave me permission to use his finger wag, then I guess I just want to leave his legacy and make sure that I show him some love as my big brother.
Bismack Biyombo showing some love to his big Congolese brother, Dikembe Mutombo.
This is Dikembe Mutombo. I am from Africa. Malaria kills thousands of children every day. Don't let your child be one of them. Make sure they sleep under a treated mosquito net. Beating malaria is like winning at basketball. You need to get to the net.
You need to get to the net. Thanks to Dikembe. That's the now retired Dikembe Mutombo, who was enshrined last year in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, two players who may one day be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, have led the Oklahoma City Thunder to a dominating 133-105 playoff victory over the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors. With Sunday night's big win in Oklahoma City, the Thunder now leads the Western Conference Finals 2-1. Durant fired in 33 points in Game 3, while Westbrook, Oklahoma City's all-star guard, had 30 points. Stephen Curry, Golden State's two-time league most valuable player, led the Warriors with 24 points. The Thunder was in such command of the game that Golden State's head coach, Steve Kerr, took out Curry and another Warriors star, Draymond Green, late in the third quarter, and both players were done for the night. Some NBA fans thought after winning a record 73 games during the regular season, the Warriors would easily win their second consecutive NBA title. But Oklahoma City is proving to be a very tough opponent, and it will be a difficult road for Golden State to get another trophy. Game four is Tuesday night in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The head of Qatar's organizing committee for the 2022 World Cup insists his country's bid to host the soccer tournament was completely clean, despite the corruption scandals that have rocked the sports governing body, FIFA. Hassan Al-Thawadi also says new laws will offer protection to migrants working on World Cup construction projects. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Qatar is spending around $10 billion on new stadiums and up to $200 billion on improving infrastructure ahead of the 2022 World Cup. That would make it the most expensive tournament ever. In a speech at London's Chatham House, the head of the organising committee, Hassan Al-Thawadi, said the cost would be worthwhile.
The passion for football that runs through the veins of our society and a desire to demonstrate to the rest of the world that our region could be and deserve to be in the headlines for reasons other than conflict and strife.
The scandals that have engulfed football's world governing body, FIFA, led to the resignation and prosecution of many of the officials who voted for Qatar's bid. FIFA appointed American lawyer Michael Garcia to investigate. He pointed to what he called serious and wide-ranging issues with the bidding and selection process before quitting in protest at FIFA's handling of his report in 2014. A summary of the investigation led by a German judge largely cleared Qatar of any wrongdoing.
We stuck to the rules. And more importantly, when the investigation happened with Michael Garcia, after the bid, we cooperated fully out of a sense of vindication and out of a sense of confidence at the cleanliness of our bid.
Human rights groups have repeatedly accused Qatar of abusing the rights of the hundreds of thousands of migrant workers building the World Cup venues. Qatar's so-called kafala, or sponsorship system, ties the legal status of migrant workers to their employer. Al-Thawadi insisted the government is committed to reforming workers' rights.
Of most importance is the new law that was signed by His Highness the Emir in October 2015, abolishing the kafala system and replacing it with a contractual agreement between employer and employee.
Amnesty International's James Lynch said the assurances were not convincing.
I think where we disagree is about the speed of reform. You know, he says that the new sponsorship law reform is a really big deal that will change the lives of workers. We are much more sceptical about that. We think that it is the kafala system in all but name, and it is adjusted rather than really reformed.
Human rights groups are calling for an investigation into the high number of heart attacks among some migrant workers, which they believe could be related to the extreme heat. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thanks, Henry. Some of Europe's biggest football clubs played for end-of-season cups over the weekend. Dutch coach Louis van Gaal had little time to savor delivering Manchester United's first trophy since the Alex Ferguson dynasty ended 3 years ago. After leading Man U to the FA Cup with a 2-1 victory over Crystal Palace in extra time, Van Gaal officially got the boot on Monday. The 64-year-old Dutchman leaves after 2 years of a 3-year contract, and he's discussing severance terms with Manchester United. Former Chelsea boss Jose Mourinho is set to be named as his replacement. Mourinho will meet with Man U officials on Tuesday. Now let's go to Italy, where Juventus beat AC Milan 1-0 to lift the Italian Cup in Rome. Substitute Spanish striker Alvaro Morata scored the game-winning goal in the 110th minute. Now let's go to Germany, where Bayern Munich defeated Borussia Dortmund 4-3 on penalties in the German Cup final in Berlin. It was the 11th domestic double for Bundesliga champ Bayern, as well as its 18th German Cup win and third in four seasons. Meanwhile, in Paris, Paris Saint-Germain beat Marseille 4-2 in the French Cup final. And let's give another Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for Swedish star Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He ended his PSG career in style, scoring two second-half goals and also setting up another. Ibrahimovic reached 50 goals in an outstanding farewell season. Earlier in the season, in announcing that he was planning to leave PSG, Ibrahimovic joked that only if they replaced the Eiffel Tower with a statue of himself would he stay.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOAsunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOAsunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
Forbes magazine recently released its list of the 50 richest sports clubs in the world. VOA sports reporter Ben Cento tells us more.
At the top of the list are Spanish football powers Real Madrid and Barcelona. Forbes says Real is worth more than $3.6 billion, and Barcelona is valued at over $3.5 billion. The two clubs waged a fierce battle for this season's La Liga trophy, the top prize in Spanish football. Barca edged Real 91 points to 90. Michael Ozanian is the executive director of Forbes Media and the managing editor of Forbes Sports Money. He says financial health is critical to a team's signing success.
It's very important to a team's bottom line and their ability to sign and keep the best players. So if you look at the top players like Ronaldo and Messi, it's no surprise that Real and Barcelona are consistently sitting atop La Liga as well as making the Champions League.
Big talent means big TV audiences. MediaPro bought the rights to televise La Liga matches, paying just over $2 billion for their three-year deal. Ozanian says that TV deals are a driving force behind a team's income and enhance their ability to attract talent.
Spain, it gets a lot of TV money. That's what helps it sign players like Ronaldo and Messi. If you look at the new players going to Manchester City, very important because Manchester City this year is going to qualify for next year's Champions League. Therefore, they know they're going to have the money so they could sign a top player to be able to keep him, and that should perpetuate their good performance. So it almost gets to be a vicious cycle.
If a team makes it to the top, it strongly tips the odds in their favor of attracting talent. as we see with underdog English Premier League champion Leicester. According to Michael Ozanian of Forbes, Leicester could catch the eyes of some well-known players.
I think next year, Leicester, because it won the Premier League this year and are going to qualify for the Champions League, will almost definitely replace Newcastle and crack our top 20 next year. I also think there's a very good chance next year that Barcelona could surpass Real Madrid as the most valuable team, because Barcelona is very close to finalizing plans and beginning their project for a new stadium and a renovated mixed-use entertainment ground around the stadium. That should enable them to increase their revenue significantly and probably surpass Real.
Ozanian says it's important for clubs to invest in their facilities. The very successful American football team, the New England Patriots, and their owner Robert Kraft have done just that. They built Patriot Place, made up of shops, eateries, bars, and anywhere else sports fans would like to spend money. He says that a team like AC Milan and its owner Silvio Berlusconi need to do something similar. As they say, spend money to make money. He says they've been losing money lately and should invest in some new facilities to get them back where they once were.
AC Milan is a great example of a team today that was like Manchester City or Chelsea 5-10 years ago. It's an undervalued brand. The team has been losing a lot of money. Berlusconi needs a new stadium, and he doesn't want to put in any of his personal wealth, I should say any more of his personal wealth, to fund losses and to build a new stadium.
Among football clubs, AC Milan is ranked number 12 overall, worth $825 million. The Italian team had plans to build a new stadium in time for the 2018-2019 season, but those plans were scrapped. Berlusconi says he is too in love with the current stadium, San Siro, to leave. San Siro is 90 years old. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Ben Cento.
Thanks, Ben. The U.S. men's national soccer team has tuned up for the upcoming Copa America Centenario with a 3-1 victory over host Puerto Rico. However, the USA's head coach, Jurgen Klinsmann, had only 8 of the 23 players he selected for the Copa America in Puerto Rico. The rest are scheduled to join up with the team in Dallas, Texas, where the Americans will hold their training camp ahead of the 16-nation Copa America. The host United States will kick off the Copa America Centenario on June 3rd when the Americans play Colombia in Santa Clara, California. This marks the first time in the 100-year history of the tournament that the Copa America has been played outside South America. The USA will also play friendly matches against Ecuador on Wednesday night in Frisco, Texas, and against Bolivia on Saturday in Kansas City, Kansas, to get ready for Copa America. Ecuador and Bolivia will also compete at the Copa America Centenario. Taking a quick look at Coach Klinsmann's selections for the tournament, Seattle Sounders striker Clint Dempsey has the most international experience with 122 caps or international matches. Meanwhile, Christian Pulisic of Borussia Dortmund is the youngest member of the USA's Copa America team at the tender age of 17. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Monday?
Well, we talked about on Friday the Preakness Stakes, the second jewel in the Triple Crown of horse racing here in the U.S., and Nyquist, the undefeated horse, looking to go for that Triple Crown. Well, Nyquist came in third, lost the race. No Triple Crown this year. Beaten by Exaggerator, who had run against Nyquist about 5 times previous, had never won, and then finally beat him to win the Preakness Stakes. Now, there's a big feel-good story. Keith and Kent DeSormo, the jockey and the trainer for this horse, Exaggerator, they're actually brothers from the state of Louisiana. So that was a big win for them, a really emotional win. They kept it in the family. So a lot of people noting that on social media. But the big story, even other than Nyquist losing, came earlier in the day. Of course, the Preakness is the big race, but they run races all throughout the day. And in two of the earlier races, two of the horses died. One horse had what they believe was a heart attack after it won its race and dropped dead. The other horse broke its leg and wasn't able to be saved, so they had to euthanize it on the track. So we saw a lot of social media reaction from animal rights groups saying this series of races in the Preakness shows the cruelty that horse racing brings, that it's cruel on the horses, that it's a barbaric sport and should be stopped. So a lot of strong reaction using the Preakness as kind of a touchstone for that position from animal rights groups.
As part of that criticism, Andrew, I read a 2012 New York Times article that says 24 horses die each week at U.S. racetracks. So clearly this is not unusual, these horses dying.
No, and that's, you know, the fact that two of them died on a day when the attention was trained on Pimlico Raceway in Baltimore, I think the people said, okay, let's use this as kind of our stepping stone or as our conversation starter about this. So we'll see if that conversation continues maybe in a couple weeks when we have the Belmont Stakes, if there's more conversation about ending horse racing or trying to change it so it's not as cruel on the horses.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, this is a big trend and one that is near and dear to my heart as a tennis fan. It is the French Open, kicked off yesterday at Roland Garros in Paris. So we see social media very much involved in this. If you use hashtag French Open on Twitter, you get a little tennis racket emoji that pops up next to it. As we talked about for things like the Super Bowl and other major sporting events, there are sometimes hashtags associated that have little emojis that go along with them. So hashtag French Open gets you a little tennis racket. Hashtag RG16 for Roland Garros 16 gets you a little red clay court. Of course, Roland Garros, known for its red clay at the French Open, is the clay tournament in the Grand Slams. Already a lot of news about Stan Wawrinka, who was last year's winner, barely got by the first round in five sets. Lucas Rosol nearly beat him. Rosol was actually trending around the world as that match was going on and coming to an end, nearly beat the defending champion. Would have been the first time in the Open era that the defending French Open champion lost in the first round of the next year, so that would have been big news. But we saw from social media, you know, a lot of reaction to that, but also Wawrinka hasn't reacted yet to his close win, but we saw...
Breathing a sigh of relief,
but we did see him, you know, a couple days ago. He had won a warm-up tournament and tweeted something out that he was now on Snapchat and had his own Snapchat filter that they had made for him. Another big social media moment in the press conference afterwards, Wawrinka said that Novak Djokovic is his favorite to win the French Open, not himself. I guess after the way he's played today, he doesn't think, I can't win this thing again, repeat. But Djokovic, as we talked about, would be big news. He would then complete the career Grand Slam. He's won the Australian, the U.S. Open, Wimbledon. He just needs to win the French Open to have that career Grand Slam.
Andrew, Paris, where the French Open is played, and Baltimore, Maryland, where they run the Preakness horse race, thousands of miles apart. And yet Mother Nature, similar rain at both events to start.
And that's really it's thrown off both of them. At the Preakness, it was a very muddy race. And at the French Open, we've had some rain delays. The schedules had to be pushed back, so we're seeing some shifting of that. Tomáš Berdych, who's a Czech tennis player, number 8 in the world, he tweeted out a tweet, said, "Spring mood, hashtag Paris, hashtag RG16. And it's a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon where he says, "Ah, spring." And then in the subsequent panels, you just see this rain and this deluge come. So that's, I think, the feeling among many in Baltimore with the rain this weekend and now in Paris with the rain. It does throw off the players, but they are having a little bit of fun with it, as Tomáš Berdych has on Twitter. Hopefully it doesn't throw off the event too much, doesn't cause any injuries or anything. As much fun as the players are having on social media, kind of making fun of the rain delays, there is concern that it might make the courts a little...
Slipperier,
or maybe kind of gum up the works with that kind of wet clay. So people are, you know, concerned about that. Certainly the players are concerned about that. And I think they're probably their sponsors are too. They don't want anybody to get hurt and be out of the running.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you on Tuesday. And that wraps up the May 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Keith Holmes, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sub-Saharan Africa has done well over the past few years. The overall trends in Sub-Saharan Africa point to accelerated democratization, development, and economic opportunity, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield recently before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. A number of countries have ended long-running conflicts and are rebuilding. Others have held successful elections in the past year. Economic opportunities are improving, and per capita income has been increasing steadily. However, in spite of these positive trends, instability and conflict continue to bedevil parts of the continent. And much of that is due to terrorism and violent extremism. Terrorist organizations such as Al-Shabaab, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, or AQIM, and Al-Murabitun are exploiting state fragility and political and economic vulnerabilities, said Assistant Secretary Thomas Greenfield. We see violent extremists focusing their recruitment efforts where there is a lack of economic opportunity, political and social alienation, poor governance, corruption of elites, and lack of accountability for abuses by security forces. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In East Africa, Al-Shabaab has launched large-scale attacks against the African Union's forward operating bases and other targets throughout Somalia and Kenya. And ISIL is attempting to co-opt local insurgencies and conflicts to expand its networks. The United States is working with individual countries and transnational organizations in Africa to boost their military capabilities and to strengthen law enforcement, judicial, and other criminal justice sector institutions. At the same time, we are working to stop the recruitment, radicalization, and mobilization of people to engage in terrorist activities. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses. We are working closely with government partners at both the national and subnational level to adopt more effective policies to prevent the spread of violent extremism, said Assistant Secretary of State Thomas Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
African Music Mix.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 1730 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's the youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent
to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is @UpfrontAfrica. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.